Hey everybody, welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Friday, May 11th, 2012. My name is Jimmy Bogle. I'm the editor of the Tucson Weekly, and I'm sitting in for Bill today. He's on vacation with his lovely wife as they celebrate their 40th anniversary in South America. We're coming to you on The Voice, KVOI AM 1030, and would also like to welcome Cochise County listeners who are tuning in on KAPR AM 930 in Douglas. This being Friday, it's time for our Friday Focus interview, and today we welcome Jane Prescott-Smith, the Managing Director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. Joining me is Dylan Smith, the King of the Kilts here in Tucson Media. He's also the editor and publisher of TucsonSentinel.com, and I hope you'll join in the conversation as well by calling the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040-2040. Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. That's a true continuing care retirement community, and you can find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Jane, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Jimmy.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Institute for Civil Discourse, what exactly it does, when it started, and why people should care about it?
Well, the Institute is a nonpartisan center for research and advocacy and policy with respect to civil discourse. We think that civil discourse is imperative for good governance and effective public policy decision making. It came into being in early 2011 in the reaction of the community to the tragic shootings of Gabby Giffords and others. There was a real call from people in the community to embrace a more civil discourse. And it was in response to that call that we decided to launch the Institute.
And now, I know is it affiliated with the University of Arizona or?
We are have an academic affiliation in the School of Government and Public Policy. People get confused because we're actually located downtown in donated space. and that's because the university doesn't support us financially.
Okay.
The Institute is supported completely by private donors.
And I know you've got a lot of heavy hitters on the advisory boards and the boards for it. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the people who are involved with the Institute?
Well, we've been extremely fortunate to have a lot of really helpful people. Our first meeting, which we held at the Supreme Court in fall of last year, we had several media leaders. We had Katie Couric and Greta Van Susteren and Scott Simon, and they were extremely helpful as we tried to unpack the media impact on civil discourse. The Institute is co-chaired by President H.W. Bush and President Bill Clinton. And so that's been terrific. Tom Daschle is one of the co-chairs. He did a terrific video for us that's on the site if anybody would like to see it.
What is that site?
It's nicd.arizona.edu.
Okay.
Sandra Day O'Connor is another one of the co-chairs, and she's done some terrific writing for us, and that's also available on the website that was tied to the anniversary of the shootings when we had students across the state engage in a essay contest. Not we, the Institute, but we, Sandra Day O'Connor and Channel 12 up in Phoenix. But we had the opportunity to weigh in on that.
Okay. Tell us about some of the concrete things. This sounds great in theory. You know, you've got all these people coming together and talking about being nice and civil and yada, yada, yada. But tell us some of the specific concrete things that the Institute is either involved in or is trying to promote. You know, what actual tangible things can the public see that the Institute is involved in?
Well, seeing stuff at the Institute is tough. You're absolutely right, because a lot of what we do is research. Hey, we're affiliated with a university, so we do research. Actually, last week on this show, Kate Kensky, a faculty member from the U of A who we have funded, was on talking about work that she's done in analyzing the online posting community for the Arizona Daily Star. Another one of the grants that we've funded is with a gal named Professor Mendoza Denton, and her research is about town halls that congressmen and congresswomen have with their constituents. And that's very helpful for elected officials to learn what kinds of things can be done to make town halls more productive instead of devolving into angry rhetoric. We've had the opportunity to meet with some elected members of the House of Representatives as well as former members of Congress to talk about how the institutions within the House actually incent uncivil discourse and things that need to change in order to make that discourse more civil. We had a very successful strategic workshop that was held at the National Press Club with members from across the country talking about how we can tap into the voter frustration with the uncivil rhetoric that's taking place in our public conversation today.
So, can you break down exactly what civil discourse is? And why is that so important? I mean, we are a country that has a long heritage of debate that's based on inflammatory rhetoric right back to our founding. Why do we all have to hold hands and sing kumbaya about things?
You know, that is a terrible misconception about civil discourse, is that we have to be nice to each other. And that certainly is not the definition that we would use. Almost everybody you talk to has a different definition of civil discourse. I mean, there's a civility charter that's been put out by UMass Boston's McCormick School. There are resolutions that have been put out by the American Bar Association, another one by the National League of Cities, and they all use slightly different definitions. At the Institute, we talk about civil discourse being frank, honest, direct. In fact, recently at an Arizona town hall, I talked about the concept of constructive confrontation, that if you hear something that you disagree with, it's really important to get that out on the table and confront it, but you do it in a constructive way that leads to learning. So you disagree with curiosity. You say, "Dylan, I really don't agree with what you just said. Could you help me understand what got you to that point of view?"
And I hear the first part of that quite often.
No comment on that. I'll just move on. Let's talk about CD8, because obviously, you know, that's the congressional district where, you know, the horrible things, you know, led to the Institute being founded. And of course, we've got another election followed by another election in the new CD2 after that. Tell me what you think about how civility is playing out in this year's election between Ron Barber and Jesse Kelly. And if you can kind of compare that to what it was like in 2010 when Gabrielle Giffords was running against Jesse Kelly.
Well, I think there's been a huge shift in Jesse Kelly's presentation of himself. I think it's pretty easy to Google old pictures of Jesse and see that his website 2 years ago, he really had the persona of angry young man, you know, machine guns and ammo and using phrases like Ponzi scheme and rhino. And he has eschewed all of that. Now you go to his website and he's dressed in a suit and tie. He's with his wife and young boys. And the language is very civil. And I think, you know, someone got to him and said, "Mr. Kelly, the voters are not interested in that angry rhetoric. They're really interested in a civil presentation of your point of view." And he is a very, very different campaigner now than 2 years ago. I think the differences between Ron Barber and Gabby Giffords are perhaps not as pronounced. The difference are maybe more driven by gender rather than tone in terms of how they interact with audiences, but not as big a difference, perhaps, between them. I actually think that for the most part, if you look at the ads that have been running, the really negative ads are not ones that the campaigns have been putting forward, but are the ones that the national parties are dropping in. And certainly, Tucson Weekly has done an excellent job of covering some of the numbers of the money that's been plowed into our city with the Republican National Congressional Campaign Committee putting in $600,000 and the DCCC putting in $473,000. I mean, this is over $1 million dropped into our little part of paradise by the players in Washington, D.C. And that, I think, is cause for concern. I think we as voters in Southern Arizona really don't want the people in Washington, D.C. telling us what to think, telling us who to vote for. And I see that kind of big money push as perhaps the biggest problem in civil rhetoric in our community.
And that's not even talking about the PACs that are putting in a lot of money into this as well. What do you think that voters should look out for in terms of civility and stuff like that in these ads? Because you talk about, you're right, these ads are coming in and a lot of them are pretty harsh and a lot of them are frankly, I'll say this so you don't have to, out and out lies and or distortions. And that's on both sides, by the way. That what should voters look for and what should voters demand, in essence, from the people who they're giving their contributions to and others when they look at these ads?
Well, I guess I would tell them don't look at them. When those ads come on, turn off the darn TV and go to one of – there's going to be a live debate between Mr. Barber and Mr. Kelly on May 23rd at the Jewish Community Center. There's going to be a forum on KUAT on May 16th. I would say if you want to figure out which of these two men you want to vote for, listen to them. Go to their debate. But don't be listening to the national campaign committees who really don't care at all about us as a people in Tucson. They just want to be able to chalk up one more for their side.
Sure. We've got about 30 seconds left before the break. Why don't you just kind of tell us it's easy to say to turn off those ads, but it's hard to figure out what ad you're looking at until you start watching it. What do you think that voters should specifically look for in their ads so they know whether or not they should take them into account in any way whatsoever, or should they just basically ignore all ads?
Well, as a marketing person, I probably wouldn't want people to ignore all ads, but I would say look for the candidates talking about what they will do as opposed to slamming their opponent. That's what I'd be looking for.
Okay. This is the Buckmaster Show. If you'd like to join in the conversation, call us at 790-2040. I'm Jimmy Bogle here with Dylan Smith. We'll be back after this break.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron McIntosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves, Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry, working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for bio development. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. My name is Jimmy Bogle. I'm the editor of the Tucson Weekly, and I'm sitting in for Bill today. Sitting to my right is Dylan Smith, the editor, publisher, and all-around head cheese of TucsonSentinel.com. And to my left is Jane Prescott Smith, the managing director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. If you'd like to join in the conversation, call 790-2040. And I know Dylan had a question for Jane.
I don't know exactly quite how to phrase this, but I think you know what the question I'm trying to ask you. Can being civil, presenting oneself in a civil manner, especially in a political campaign, can that mask what your true intentions are?
I think it can. And that's why being civil in the traditional sense, social civility, doesn't go far enough. There's a difference when you think about social civility and when you think about political civility. And even though everyone has a slightly different definition, there are a few core tenets that keep coming back no matter who you talk to. And one of those tenets is honesty, that if you're lying, by definition, you are not practicing civil discourse. And luckily for us today, we have a lot of organizations out there that take time to judge whether or not comments that are made by our elected leaders and by candidates are truthful or not, or where they fall on a truthometer scale. You can go to Politicheck, which is out of Tampa Bay.
They've actually won the Pulitzer Prize for their great work.
That's right. Fact Check is the Annenberg Public Policy Center at University of Pennsylvania. That's right. And Fact Checker at Washington Post, right? Thanks,
sure.
Jimmy. So, but the point is you can go online and you can check the truthfulness of statements. And if you find someone who's repeatedly stretching the truth or is even a pants-on-fire liar, then it's pretty reasonable to say that person does not practice civil discourse. The other things that tend to rise to the top in terms of uncivil behavior is questioning the motivations of another person. So you and I may have different beliefs in how to achieve a goal, but to say that because your approach is different than mine, you're trying to destroy the country, that would be assigning a bad motivation that most certainly wouldn't be true.
What if a bad motivation is true? What if someone is, supported by an industry and trying to sneak through a piece of legislation? Is it being uncivil to call them out on that?
You'd have to give me, I guess, a more specific example of that. I think certainly if somebody's putting through legislation and it's being supported by a particular lobbying group, that's to be put on the table and known. Transparency is important. But they probably are not thinking that's going to destroy the country, or they wouldn't do it. I just don't believe that people decide to go through the tremendous personal sacrifice that serving as an elected official requires in this country in order to destroy the country. So when, you know, when people use titles like, oh, you know, they're just trying to drive this country into the ground, or they don't want your children to be educated, or they want you to die soon. You know, those are just ridiculous claims to make and don't advance the discussion. You know, there's sort of a rule of thumb I tell people to think about. You know, before you say something, think about whether it's going to advance the conversation or shut the conversation down, because what we want to do is be able to continue talking to each other.
Sure. Let's go to the Buckmaster Lifeline. We've got Joel. He's actually got a really interesting question about the styles of debate we have in our country. How you doing, Joel?
I'm doing great, and it's an interesting discussion you're having. I would just modify everything that's being said by the fact that, unfortunately, in our country we have more means of communication than ever before, and yet we have more uninformed people because of the fact that there's so much faulty or emotional information out there that it's going to be hard for people to follow these guidelines, which I agree with totally. I believe we should all have politicians fact-checked, and people should be more rational in their arguments and less emotional. And in that regard, I'm saying that advertising, you're never going to be able to control that. That sort of speaks to a candidate by itself. But it really bothers me when we have these quote-unquote debates that aren't really anything like a debate. They're sponsored by somebody. They have a moderator or a set of moderators that serve them up set questions. Or currently we have X, Y, and Z who asked this question online, or somebody tweeted this question. That's not a debate. A debate in the Lincoln Douglas style is where you get the two candidates, let's say it's down to two, and you get them in a room, and you don't have a moderator that times them or asks them questions. You let the two people argue with each other and try to say why their ideas or what they're trying to persuade you of is correct.
Thanks, Joel. I appreciate it. What do you think about that idea? What do you think about if we could somehow magically, and of course this is a tough thing to do, but if we could actually change the way we do debates and go to more of a Lincoln-Douglas style type of thing, do you think that would help? Do you think that the way that we do tend to do debates in this country in the political process, do you think that helps things or hurts things?
You know, I actually don't think that the style of debate is what drives the tenor of debate. I think that the tenor of debate is a function of choices that the individual candidates make. And I think more than the style of the debate is the willingness to see both sides of the debate. You know, 100 years ago when I was in high school and they used to teach debate in high school, you had to learn both the affirmative and the negative side, because you'd come to class and you'd never know which side the teacher was going to have you argue. So you had to understand both sides of the debate. What I think we see a lot, and Joel was referring to this, that there are all of these sources of news out there, but they tend to be very monotone. So you can actually spend all day listening to news but only get one side of the debate. And I think that's not helpful. I think it would be much more helpful if people would be willing to look for points of view that are different from theirs so they could be able to get a more balanced picture, a broader perspective.
We've got Doug on the Buckmaster Lifeline. Doug, if you could kind of keep it brief because we're coming up near the break, but we appreciate you calling in. What's up?
Yes, I'm the Amphi School Site Council, and we were working with the Jacobson Institute to try to get values like don't lie, cheat, steal, that kind of thing into the schools. We were able to do it, but we had resistance because those are moral values. And what you're advocating now is also a moral value, which is, you know, it's a biblical value, speaking the truth in love. So do you think there's going to be some pushback because now you're advocating morality and, you know, we've had this moral relativism for decades?
You know, I have to disagree with you about it being a moral value. I actually think of it as a civic value. Not that moral values and civic values have no overlap, but morality certainly goes to areas that are private life as well as public life. When we talk about the values that will improve civic engagement, that will get our citizens more involved in the life of their government, in the life of their community, there are important civic values, and I think honesty is one of those.
We've only got about a minute left before we have to go to the news. Why don't you, if you can explain, tell us a little bit about the discussions that you have had and the Institute has had with various elected members. I know you've talked to some members of Congress and things like that. What kind of response have you gotten from them? Are people open to listen to this? And if they are willing to listen to you, do you think they're just giving you lip service, or do you think that people in Washington, D.C. actually do want us to move towards a more civil discourse?
There are a ton of people in Washington, D.C. that want to move toward a more civil discourse. We had 13 members of elected members, current sitting members of the House, and 8 former members of Congress give us an hour. That's not lip service. These people are incredibly busy. For them to spend an hour with us and help us understand how the institution has evolved and in sense, uncivil discourse, meant a lot to me. And, you know, the things that they told us are not rocket science. They're not things you haven't probably heard before. But it's getting legislation back into the committee. It's getting back to regular rule.
Well, thanks, Jane. Thanks for coming in. We really appreciate it. We will be back with the Reporters Roundtable after the news.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. President Obama and Mitt Romney both talking about jobs today and the economy. The president's in Nevada promoting policies aimed at helping homeowners avoid foreclosure. Governor Romney talked about jobs and economic policy during a campaign stop in North Carolina. The socialist leader of Greece says efforts to form a coalition government have failed. Says he'll hand the mandate back to the country's president tomorrow. The man in charge of J.P. Morgan Chase has been among those arguing against stricter government regulation of banks, but the news that the bank has suffered a $2 billion trading loss is bringing renewed calls on Capitol Hill for tighter banking restrictions. The Dow is down 22 points, the NASDAQ up 7, the S&P off 2. More details at srnnews.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron McIntosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Cold Road Extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already, two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030 and the Voice Network over Southern Arizona. I'm Jimmy Bogle, the editor of the Tucson Weekly, sitting in for Bill today. And each Friday, as regular listeners know, we present the Reporters Roundtable, featuring some of the area's most stunning and handsome journalists discussing the week's top stories.
Joining me, radio.
Yes, exactly. Joining me are Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, sticking around. And joining us newly is Mark Evans, the head honcho at TucsonCitizen.com. And if you want to throw in your 2 cents, gosh darn it, call the Buckmaster Show Lifeline at 790-2040. And the Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community, and you can find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. And before we actually get into the politics and the really gritty news, I just have to say, am I the only one whose allergies are just raging out of control this week with all the wind and
everything? Well, that is the gritty news. That dust storm the other day really just set everybody off.
I went outside, was chewing gum, and opened my mouth and quickly had to get rid of the grit that had filled it. So, yeah, that was quite the haboob.
And I've actually got people sick, and my nose feels like I've been doing things one should not do with their nose, is all I would say. But anyway, I know a lot of people out there who are listening who are probably having allergy issues as well, so I just want to let you know you're not alone.
I hear the fire department had a huge spike in treating people for asthma attacks because of everything that's been going on. Mostly related to the dust storm, but you know, you combine that with all the pollen that's floating around.
Right. Most people who live here end up becoming allergic to Palo Verde and mesquite and the grasses, and it's the Palo Verde is what's out there right now. It's the yellow snowstorm that we get every April and May. That's what kills me.
Well, at least we got rid of most of those olive trees.
Right, yeah.
Remember those things? God.
Welcome to the biology discussion on the Master Show, Reporters Roundtable. Actually, let's move on to the congressional race. Of course, CD8 is going to be the big news around here, one of the big news items for the next month until it's decided, and then it'll be replaced with CD1 and CD2 and CD3. But, of course, lots of ads hitting the airwaves this week with Jesse Kelly and his Republican associates accusing Ron Barber of wanting to cut $500 billion out of Medicare. Jesse Kelly bringing out an ad with his grandpa saying, "Ron Barber, don't take away my Medicare," and conveniently forgetting the fact that he at once was very clearly on the record as wanting to privatize Medicare and Social Security. What do you guys think? Are these ads going to do any good? What's going on with them?
I think what's going on right now is we've got a lot of confused voters. You know, there's a lot of info floating around that just does not accurately reflect what these two men stand for and what their policies, what they might be voting for once they get into office.
And I think it reflects who they expect to vote. They expect it to be an older population that's going to turn out in this off weird year election June thing that we've got going on here.
That's who votes, and that's who you got to pander to.
And so, apparently Jesse's had some sort of conversion when he was in Texas as to what he'd like to do with Social Security. And
well, he's had a conversion since election night when he was still in favor of privatizing Medicare and ending Social Security.
My problem with the CD8 race is that I've had a hard time being very enthusiastic about it because it's just a sideshow. It's whoever gets elected is going to be a congressman for 2 months because what happens in August, Congress adjourns so that they can go campaign for office. So and I don't know that whoever wins this race is going to have some sort of leg up in the CD2 race. It's very possible Jesse Kelly could win this race and then lose to Martha McSally in the primary in August based on the results of because of the change in the CD2 race.
I actually think that there's more on the line for Jesse Kelly here because, you know, Ron Barber, if he were to lose this to Jesse Kelly, at least he can say, well, it was a plurality Republican district.
Right.
Whereas if Jesse Kelly loses this, for him to try to come back and make the case to voters to give him a third shot in what will be pretty much an evenly split district, I think there's a lot on the stake for him, more for him than Ron Barber or anyone else for that matter.
I agree. I would agree with that. Jesse Kelly's got to win if he wants to also try to win CD2.
Let's talk about another congressional race. Paul Bebeau, the sheriff of Pinal County, announced today that he is going to withhold running for Congress. What was the district he was running in? I'm blanking
CD4.
On
CD4. It's mostly northwestern Arizona.
Yes.
It kind of dips down to Florence.
It wraps around Phoenix. And
yeah.
Yes. A rather conservative district, and he's decided with the revelations that came out about him a while back that, gosh darn it, instead, he thinks the folks of Pinal County need him to remain a sheriff.
He sent out an email at 4:01 a.m. this morning.
Right.
And who's up then?
Sent it three times, actually.
I'm not even up then.
But, well, he might not have gone to bed then, depending on how crazy the night before went. But
yeah, he's claiming that the people of Pinal County need him. And
that there was a clamor for him to stay.
Right, and that his assistant chief, who was running for sheriff, first name escapes me, his last name's Henry.
Steve Henry,
right, is under the gun from the federal government because he says there's an investigation going on into all of this is what's going on in that sheriff's department. But they've also said that because the sheriff's department takes federal money that Henry can't run and be an assistant sheriff so that he would have to take some ministerial job. So Paul has to come in and save the day for Pinal County, which, of course, nobody is buying.
I was about to say, we know that's what they're saying, but what is really behind this? I mean,
it's a very, very conservative district, and there are two other, pretty well-known candidates running in it. He was in a three-way primary, and it's
when Ron Gould is collecting more money than he is, I think it's a pretty good sign that he's not going to win
race. He's got he's running against a pretty well-known conservative state senator and a congressman.
Right.
Who
and
moved to get into that district.
And I'm unfamiliar enough with what's going on in the Pinal County Sheriff's race to know how many people are running for sheriff, but I know there was other candidates in there besides Henry. So
there are three other Republicans running, a couple of Democrats, and an independent.
So it may be soon that we've heard the last of
And then the other three Republicans, I believe, all have law enforcement experience.
Right.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that if you're running for Congress and you have a big secret like the fact that, I'm gay, for example, you should probably not expect to be able to get through the race without that coming out in some way, shape, or form. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is made possible in part by Adobe House Antiques. They specialize in early 20th century European and American Western art. I know Dylan's a big fan of American Western art. And Adobe House Antiques is located in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell Avenue. And you can call them at 325-9439. Let's go on to kind of keep in the congressional and election vein here a little bit. Some chaos possible in terms of who's running for what and running where. This redistricting battle is not necessarily completely over yet, is it, Mark?
No. So a group of conservative Republicans in Phoenix have sued the state in federal court and in state court to try to overturn the recently approved by the federal government redistricting for both the legislative and the congressional districts. For the legislative districts, the candidates have to file their nominating petitions in about a week and a half, the end of this month. So there is no time to get a ruling by the court before then. So they've asked a three-judge panel in Washington, D.C., to consider whether to redraw the lines. Now, Maricopa County has intervened in the case, or is trying to intervene in the case, because they're saying, we don't have time to do this. We've already spent the last 6 months redrawing all of our precincts to reflect these new boundaries. I think some of the other recorders and elections officials in the other counties are all going to jump in. If they're successful in getting to the judges to change these boundaries, we're in for a summer of total chaos because no one will really know what district that they're in and where to raise money and the like.
How much of a chance – I know, you know, it's we're kind of asking, you know, predicting the future here, but what kind of chance do you think that these lawsuits have? Because these – you know, they came through our the Independent Redistricting Commission, and the Justice Department is basically, you know, given at least preliminary approval. I mean, do these lawsuits have any chance?
Well, if you listen to the people of Fair Trust, they would say yes. But other more reasonable people who've been following it all along, I've been following it, I wouldn't say closely, but I've been keeping a pretty good eye on it. Their argument is that they've packed – the Redistricting Commission packed too many Republicans into too many districts, and they have to show how that violates the Constitution or violates state laws or whatever, and I don't know if they're going to be able to accomplish
it. It's a difficult argument to make that the redistricting process was unfair to the GOP when we've ended up with still – you know, congressional districts right. that are going to favor the Republicans and legislative districts that are going to still allow for a GOP supermajority.
And clearly, though, there's more balance than there is right now. And there was no way that the Redistricting Commission was going to go through and redraw the lines in this state and not have some reduction in the power of Republicans because they have extraordinary power right now based on the way things shaped out over the last decade.
Yeah, I believe the maps the way they are right now, the congressional – I'm sorry, the state maps is 16 of the 30 districts would still be Republican – fairly Republican safe. 9 would be Democratic safe. The other 5 would be toss up. So that's not exactly a big slant against the Republicans. But then again, if you look at the numbers they've got right now in the legislature where they've got super majorities in both houses, that would be a change.
And what the Republicans are arguing is that that only is correct if you look at straight up registration. But if you look at the presumptive voting, the people who actually vote, it's much closer. And that's what they're worried about, is that there's the opportunity here for more Democrats to get elected, and what they see is conspiracy, that Colleen Mathis, the chairman, the supposedly independent chairman of the commission, conspired with the two Democrats to make it look good. But on the really, if you go behind the scenes and look at the numbers, it's really favoring the Democrats. And whether that's going to wash with the judges, and the judges are going to step in this legislative process and redo all these maps in a couple of weeks, I just don't see it happening. I don't see the judges wanting to dive into that.
Other big news this week, the Border Patrol, for the first time in, I believe, 8 years, announced a new strategy in terms of how they're going to deal with issues along the border. And it's kind of a confusing strategy, though. I tried to read some of the news reports on it and look at it, and I'm not exactly sure what's going on. Can you kind of clarify things there a little bit, Dylan?
Well, I read that the document that the BP put out four or five times, and I'm still not quite sure what exactly that thing says. It's some, you know, it's some 30-page document that's got pretty much more photos in it than explanation of what's going on.
But are they nice photos? That's
some
thing.
Of them are pretty good photos. They've got some pretty good photogs working for them. But what it comes down to is they're going to focus more on repeat border crossers rather than trying to stop everybody. Which is a bit of a switch from the, well, we need to have – they used to – the old metric was operational control of the border, where they could stop, you know, the vast majority of people who were crossing in any specific area. Now they're going to just focus on, you know, we've caught this guy five times. It's time to put him in jail.
And I don't know how you come up with a strategy for that. I mean, if – does that mean that they're not going to have – thousands of Border Patrol agents out patrolling the desert and stopping the groups as they're walking by and hiding in the arroyos and packing themselves into vans and cars and all the like, which is mostly what they can consume
well,
themselves
it seems
with.
Like they I still mean, want to have even more agents
I mean,
than
are
they
gonna,
now.
Are they going to stop a van full of illegal immigrants and only take the guys they've caught before and let everybody else go? I mean, I'm completely mystified by this change in policy. I have no idea what it means.
And a year ago, they had, you know, were announcing that the catch and release, you know, quote-unquote catch-and-release policy was over with and that everybody was going to face a consequence. So I'm not
– Which is what they put into effect in Yuma, and it was quite successful.
So I'm not quite sure how that is going to play into this new – it was very much written in bureaucratese. So we're going to have to see – in effect, what they actually do with this new idea.
Exactly. Some of the other things that were in there is they want to cooperate more with other border agencies and they want to do a lot more in, you know, intelligence gathering as well. Yeah. A lot of behind the scenes stuff.
More work with local agencies.
Exactly. Whereas now it's just, you know, boom, put a bunch of folks on the border.
And it's that 287G program that got us into trouble in Maricopa County because he had a person like the good Sheriff Arpaio who took that ball and ran with it off out into some field that they never intended for him to go. And so that's also fraught with problems if they try to reinforce the 287G program or whatever its latest incarnation might be.
Well, we've got about a minute left. The budget that was approved by the legislature last week was actually signed into law by Governor Jan Brewer this week. The budget's not as harsh as some of the past budgets have been, but it's certainly nowhere near the budgets that we were, especially when it comes to education, the budgets that we had before the Great Recession hit. Dylan, what does this budget mean? What are people out there on the streets going to see as a result of this?
I'm not quite sure about that. But the thing that struck me about this budget is it's another attempt to, you know, balance the budget on paper. But really, the legislature went and raided a few more pots of money that they dug up that were supposed to be dedicated to other things and put that into the general fund to pay for, you know, pretty much everything rather than what that money was supposed to be going for. That's what's been going on for the past 3 years of, you know, Arizona trying to get a handle on its fiscal situation.
Well, thanks, Dylan. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, sir.
After the break, the segment you've all been waiting for, the Culinary Cruiser, Matt Russell. Stick around.
One of Broadway's biggest hits is on tour and coming soon. Disney and Cameron McIntosh's Mary Poppins, live on stage. Variety raves Mary Poppins is the rare touring production that over-delivers at every level. And now is your chance to experience it.
Disney's Mary Poppins, May 16th through the 20th at the Tucson Music Hall. Tickets start at $29. Purchase tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com or call 1-800-745-3000.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food.
Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Jimmy Bogle of the Tucson Weekly, sitting in for Bill today. And I don't know if you're hungry, but I am out there. And we got Matt Russell here to talk to us. Matt, the Culinary Cruiser, how you doing?
Jimmy, I am doing great, but I'm hungry. It's 5 minutes to one, and you know sometimes I'm broadcasting with you live from a different restaurant, but I put it off because I just want the stomach to make a little bit more noise before I sit down and enjoy my feast.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've actually been here doing the show for my lunch hour, so I'm getting hungry as well. I know your happy hour pick of the week is normally a happy thing, but this is kind of a bittersweet pick.
It is, yeah. As foodies across Southern Arizona know, Janos Wilder, our iconic world-class chef right here in Tucson, announced recently that he's going to be closing Janos Restaurant and J-Bar right up there on the campus of the Westin La Paloma. Certainly his other restaurant, Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, is just continuing to do some great things, but we have just until the end of this month to take advantage of Janos and J-Bar. So, Jimmy, I'm saying J-Bar is my happy hour pick for the day. This is a great place to head up. You want to be able to get your hands around one of these iconic J-Dogs, which is Janos' interpretation of the Sonoran hot dog, with some poblano chili crema that he lovingly drizzles over that bad boy. It's only available, Jimmy, between 5 and 6:30. And you're also going to get half-off margaritas while you're up there. Happy hour tonight at J-Bar up at La Paloma.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you're not making my hunger go away by talking about that.
Mission accomplished.
Oh, man. There's a grand reopening of there are not a lot of Puerto Rican restaurants around, but there is one here in Tucson, and they're having a grand reopening here.
Yeah, you know, it's not a grand opening per se, because this great restaurant, El Coqui, Puerto Rican restaurant, has been around for a couple of years, but they recently relocated to 6151 East Broadway, and their grand reopening is tomorrow. And as I understand it, Jimmy, the party's going to be running all day. Now, they call themselves Creative Caribbeans, and that's manifest in their cuisine and their authentic cocktails and the special live music, which they tell me is going to get going at about 6 p.m. tomorrow night. Now, get this. I love their plantain-crusted grouper with a mango Grand Marnier and guava rum sauce. I said rum! Yeah, can it get any better than El Coqui Puerto Rican restaurant tomorrow? All day, what a party.
I have to say that when I was at El Coqui last time, I was a big fan of their cocktails. They do some amazing things with coconuts in their cocktails. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't just prepackaged stuff on the rocks. I mean, they really come at it really authentically.
And it's pretty delicious. Of course, one of the big things going on this weekend that we cannot forget is Mother's Day.
Always such a special day.
If you're out there in listener land and you haven't gotten your mom a card or flowers or something, you'd better get on it because time is running out. What do you recommend that people should be doing on Mother's Day here, Matt?
You know, there's so many different places and wonderful destinations to dine with mom and have a memorable meal. And I'm seeing my own mom this weekend. She no longer lives here in Tucson. But if she were here, Jimmy, I would take her this year to Wildflower for Sunday brunch over there on Ina and Oracle. They're going to be open a little bit earlier this year, starting at about 10 a.m. on Sunday. And brunch is going to be served up until 2. Now, some of the items on this year's menu that intrigued me were the Dungeness crab omelet and an incredible egg sandwich with an applewood smoked bacon, Havarti cheese, and avocado topping. And it's all going to be washed down with mimosas and bellinis for only $7. So Mama's got a treat coming her way, Jimmy, at Wildflower Sunday Brunch this Sunday. But we have to say, reservations, reservations, reservations. It's a big day for dining in the Old Pueblo. Do yourself a favor. Make a phone call, make a reservation wherever you decide to treat Mom to on Sunday.
Yeah, you wouldn't want Mom to be sitting around in the hot sun waiting to get a table, would you? You want to get Mom in so you can get those mimosas in her right away.
Right. See, I'd put Mom in the line outside and I'd belly up to the bar and have a few mimosas and say, Mom, how you doing over there? It'll only be a few more minutes.
Well, thanks, Matt. I've gone from hungry to famished.
Have a great weekend.
You too. The Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show comes to you in part from Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community, and you can find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Additional report comes from Flowers Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants. They're located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at FlowersRieger.com. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, and on behalf of Rosemary Brandt and Bill, who will be back next week, I'm Jimmy Bogle, wishing you a great weekend.
Ten thirty, KVOI Cortero Tucson, and 9:30 KAPR Douglas, the voice, Good News Radio Network.